Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and as always, joining me for the ongoing mission to explore new comics and small press creations are writer, artist, and creator of the ongoing superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And our very own lawnmower man, it's Tony Esmond.
I thought you'd like that. Wasn't too bad, that one. It was all right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wanted to be nicer to you this week.
Yeah, thank you, mate.
Before we get stuck in, we just want to say a huge thank you to all you listeners who have gotten in touch to tell us about your books and recommendations. We've been sent a lot of stuff since we started, which is amazing. And we're going to do our best to give a mention to stuff when we can. But, of course, we're all busy fellas, aren't we, lads? We've got, like, full-time
Indeed.
Jobs.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, full-time jobs, or we're walking the streets at night, aren't we, Tony?
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to do our best to mention what.
Yeah, but thanks for the books though. Yeah,
big time.
Yeah, brilliant. We love it, and yeah, we've been really sort of pleasantly surprised and amazed by the quality of stuff coming in. So yeah, thank you very much for that, folks. And it's also been great to hear that even amongst all this inane, childish, and downright ludicrous waffle, that we're also able to give you all some handy tips and insight too. That was the whole reason why this show exists, after all. Well, that and me, Dan and Tony should really be kept off the streets whenever possible. But without further ado, we've got another special guest this week, one we're excited about. So he's one half of the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast, co-writer of the book Deadbeats, and the creator behind the mind-bending digital world of the graphic novel Transreality and its upcoming sequel, Transreality New Worlds. It's Chris Lackey. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, Chris. You all right?
Is this thing on? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, yes. You're right, mate. Yeah.
Hello.
You know, how was that for an intro? Was that big enough?
Wonderful, yeah. Gosh.
Is your dressing room fully stocked with like white linen goods and like you've got the blue M&Ms? That's all right, is it?
Your
rider.
Yeah.
My rider has been filled to the T, which is great.
That's what it is. Right. Now, like those other poor souls before him, Chris is going to be joining us for the entire show.
But
he sounds
I got my pants off.
As you can tell,
ready to roll.
He's already fitting in marvelously with the rest of us. But before we grill him like a piece of chicken over his book and work processes, it's that time of the show where I say, how are we and what have we been reading, gents? Tony, Mr. Esmond.
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, are you?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Dan, you okay?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah, good.
You paused for a moment. You're all right, Dan. You paused for a moment.
A bit down.
The fucking, my carbon monoxide alarm decided at 5 a.m. this morning it was running out of batteries. So every 30 seconds let out a little bleep. So that was great. But yeah, apart from that, it's all gravy.
We've got a feisty Dan Butcher on.
Yeah, he's lively.
Nice, nice. Anyway, Tony, what are you up to, my friend?
In the spirit of having watched bad films, I can't remember what it was last week. Was it Tremors 3? I can't remember which one I'd watched. But this week, I've outdone myself by watching The Fantastic Four at the cinema.
Oh,
there's new people in the cinema. Absolutely, that was quite good. Two people in the cinema.
Two people.
I thought you said the movie was quite good.
No. It's like, but bizarre. I won't go into it because we're not a review of movie show, but very short. It was very bizarre. I found it strange.
Yeah, it's only like 100 minutes or something like that, isn't it?
Which
is quite amazingly short for like a big blockbuster film these days.
I find the thing fascinating. I really want to know more about what's happened behind the scenes on that. And this is an absolute car crash from.
Yeah, I think like everything's happened. I mean, it's essentially like every week the behind the scenes behind this show. It's just chaos, you know.
Sexy
you know, there's cocaine everywhere. Do you know what I mean? There's fireworks, and there's whatever me and Dan do. So
it sounds like he kind of like the director guy Trank. He
Josh
wanted
Trank.
To do kind of like, yeah, like a kind of fucked up body dysmorphia, like David Cronenberg style. And I think the studio kind of saw what he was doing and just got absolute cold feet.
There is a bit of that in it, but. It's like he doesn't know any of the characters and they don't really talk to each other. And yeah, Sue's quite good in it. She's quite good. Her effects and that. But the rest of it's a bit weird. The thing looks like he's going to fall apart any second. He's a bit sort of crumbly.
It's because he's not wearing any pants. That's what it is.
The thing
is,
he
has no penis.
Yeah, that sucks.
No penis. Very true.
Is that the first thing you notice, Chris?
First thing you really said on the pod, which I'm proud of you for.
It's yeah, of course. I'm gonna notice if somebody doesn't have a penis.
It's an age-old question, is it? What is the thing's dong like? And
yeah,
this kind of spits on that.
And it's like, guess what? No dong.
No dong.
Yeah,
what a rip.
Yeah, that's why it's getting such bad reviews.
Yeah. This bloke can stretch. This bloke can fly and go in flames. She can turn invisible, and you don't get a penis. Is that, yeah.
That's not really a superpower.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It might help some of us, to be fair.
He's made of stone, but he can never get a hard-on. There you go.
Hey! Oh, the Punisher strikes again.
What should we do? Should we do reviews this week?
Yeah, what are you reading, Tony? Come on, what have you been?
This week, I read probably the best thing I've read this week is a book called Mean Girls Club, which is by Nobrow. It's written by a guy called Ryan Heschke, who is a guy out of Vancouver, mainly a sort of fine art guy from Vancouver. But it's I don't know how to sum it up, but it basically confirms everything that 14-year-old me believed that women were like. It's sort of they're quite sort of scary. It's not out yet. It's out next month. But Nobrow, who published it, sent me a preview copy, really kind of them. It kind of pastiches, well, it's kind of like an acid trip version of LA Confidential, put it that way.
Okay.
There's a sort of variety of women in it who look like something out of David Lynch's Mulholland Drive. Sort of overly made up set in the 1950s, I think. Sort of, you know, big busted, smoking, you know, slick back hair. One's got an eye patch. You know, the names like Sweets, McQuaalude. I think it's probably my favorite name. But it starts with them at the
isn't that a drug? A Quaalude, isn't that?
Quaalude, yeah, sort of.
Yeah,
downer.
Sort of 50s drug, I suppose.
Oh, that's a downer.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a downer.
You've been taking them, Dan. Is that what it is? Are you on them, Dan? Is that?
Dan McQuaalude. It's like Lone Wolf McQuaalude. That's like you.
That's a quality film.
It is. Yeah. Anyway, it starts off with they're in the 113th secret meeting of the Mean Girls Club, which is them sort of walking about doing drugs and hitting things. And they just, I've written a list of things that happen. Then they go sort of on a rampage across the city. I think it's LA. Firing machine guns, injecting insect venom, fish slap fighting with big fishes, examining their pubic areas with microscopes, murdering, obviously, turning into a spider with a woman's head, and robbing a van that's full of lingerie.
Is this what happens in the book, or is this what your weekend was like?
Both. It sort of, it reminds me of, God, it's got like Charles Burns. Is there anyone's read Charles Burns? You know, Black Hole and X'd Out and all that sort of thing. Raw magazine. It's got that sort of really strange feeling to it. But it's just, and it's all done in black, pink, and white. So it's got that sort of two-tone. I know we've talked about this two-tone being cool. And each panel is a sort of weird homage to stuff. You know, it's very sort of trippy. It's, you know, there's a real acid sort of side to it. And he sort of relishes in it. He's obviously sort of, is it BDSM? Is that it?
Bondage
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that to it as well.
I mean, I'm a very innocent person. I know nothing of what you speak. Chris?
I actually know. Yeah. It's a bondage discipline, sadomasochism.
Sadomasochism. That's the bit I was trying to work out. Yeah. It's definitely that. It's got this, you know, this sort of sexual side of it. It's, you know, there's no full on sex in it, but it's just sort of for somebody with a certain mood. Put it that way. I mean, they go to the pictures in it at one point. That's quite a nice little bit where they go and see a film and then they cut the head off the projectionist. But it's really, really interesting. It's only a short comic. It's only like 24 pages. It's part of the 17x23 series that they're bringing out. But yeah, I would recommend getting a copy. It's out, I think, mid-September from Nobrow, and you can get a copy from www.nobrow.net. Very good it is.
Sounds cracking.
Very strange, but interesting.
Like all the books you read, Tony.
It is. It's definitely on the weird side, but makes a change. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sort of thing. Which is great because, like, you know, I don't normally pick up that sort of stuff. But when the way you describe it, I'm like, right, I need to read that.
Yeah.
You know, immediately.
I put an image of it out, saying, you know, I've just got this through the post, and I think I've got 50 retweets almost. So, you know, over the next hour of people who just love that sort of cover image. You know.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah. Nice. Interesting.
What about you, Dan? What have you been reading?
I've been going to the web this week. I've been checking out a webcomic called The Specialists. Any of you guys familiar with that?
Yeah, I am. Very cool.
Yeah, written by Sean Gustafsson and Al Fukalek. I probably got that name horribly wrong. But it's a comic set like in an alternative World War II where the Nazis have developed the kind of the Übermensch, the Supermen. And basically it's like the focus of the Allies, how they counter this, and they make their own team called the Specialists. Okay. It's cracking. There's like 200 plus pages. Whoa. It's a real, real good story. I mean, the writer, Sean, you can see he's done a hell of a lot of research into the period. And the art reflects that as well. Like, all the period pieces are spot on. Even the kind of detailing on the website. It's like you're looking at old kind of like Secret Service documents that are kind of all aged and tatty. Yes, really, really good read.
Is it still staying current? Because I haven't read it for quite some time. I remember being really caught up by the just the art style, which has got a nice sort of, if I remember, sort of a slightly pencil-y, sort of sketchy look with color over the top of it.
That's right.
Rather than it being like solid inks and stuff. It's nice.
Yeah, it's still updating. I mean, with webcomics, I kind of binge them rather than do the page a week.
Mm.
I kind of wait till it builds up and then crack on with it. But that's still updating. I think it's every Monday. So that's it. thespecialistcomic.com.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, like I say, we'll post up links in the show notes and stuff. But stay tuned. As for what I've been reading this week, I went to my bookshelf. Ever since we started this show, one of the things I'm really enjoying is going back to the bookcase to reread some of like the Great Small Press books that I've picked up over the time at cons and stuff. And I just, because I've just moved house, just chilling out, put out the bookcase. I've yet to sort of organise it. Do you get this, where you get really oddly excited about organising your graphic novel shelf? Does anyone else get this?
Definitely.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, good. Thanks. Thank God, it's not just me. so I picked out the three books of Ronin Dogs by Mark Pierce.
I've not heard of that one.
Yeah, Mark Pierce. You can't get it online. It's not available digitally yet, which I'm sure you'll do in the future, but it's definitely one you've got to check out. I discovered this at Bristol last year, which, as I've said before, was my first ever sort of convention appearance. So I was high on life, as it were. And for that show, myself and Sean McCullerist, we were placed next to the duo of Ian Matthews and Danny Abram, who were there with their sci-fi book Razorhawk. And the first convention, it was a great sort of opportunity to sort of meet. You were sort of nervous, and we were lucky enough to be sat next to people that were just really nice, you know, rather than really standoffish and stuff.
Mm.
So we immediately became like con besties, as it were. And Ian said,
you're going to love it. You're doing that, haven't you?
Yeah. We're con besties. Ian said, have you read Ronin Dogs? And I was like, oh, no, I've never really heard of it. And he picked up the latest issue, which is issue 3 at Bristol. And I took one look at it, and then I walked over to Mark's table and picked up all three books immediately. And basically the setup, it's a big sci-fi sort of buddy sort of comedy about two, like, friendship, robots, aliens, space, goodies and baddies. And as it says in the book here, it's filled with stupid jokes and fart gags. It's Derek Riggs and Jennifer Lewis have been on the run from authorities for 3 years. They're not bad people. They didn't do anything that bad. But the more they run, the more they're chased with the Federation, bounty hunters, etc. chasing them. It's basically like a lot of action scenes and like big robots and just this bit of hilarious humour going through it, like visual humour. Like I think on the third one, it starts off where they just land on this planet and they're going into a video store. And in the middle of nowhere, it's called Barry's Films, and the art, like Mark, the artist, he puts lots of sort of in jokes into the artwork itself, because he does everything on it. It's black and white interiors and stuff, and there's just a shelf of all these videos, like real nasty sort of VHSs and stuff, because it's an old VHS shop. You'll like that, Tony. On the shelf, like they've got titles like The Adventures of Sweat and Space Blokey. And the one that made me laugh every time was one that was just called Bum War. that makes me. And the cover is just two bums facing each other.
Buns or bums?
Bums. But
B-U-M.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, Chris is. Yeah, not Bun War. There's not like two bakers about to fight each other.
Yeah, that was much less interesting.
One of the blokes in my office has just gone on holiday, and I've started the rumor that he's gone to a place called Port Bum. I don't think anyone quite understands. I keep texting him with "How's Port Bum?" and he doesn't reply.
Is there a lot of shipping there?
Yeah, I think there might be.
Ronin Dogs there, it's like full of, you know, you can tell the setup. They go somewhere and people chase them and there's lots of explosions and crazy humour. And it's properly hilarious. You're like, they're sort of quick reads. Even though the third book's like 60 pages. And he's looking to bring out a new issue at Thought Bubble this year. So if you're at Thought Bubble, definitely check him out. He always shares a table with James State. Has any of you heard of James State, the illustrationist? Illustrationist, is that a word?
No.
Well, it is now.
Yeah.
Cool word.
Yeah. He did a comic called Big Jimmy, which is another brilliant title, but that's for another time. And they're like two best mates that go to every con together.
Besties.
They're con besties. So definitely check them out at Thought Bubble this year. It's going to be Ronin Dog Zero, which Mark has posted a cover of on his Twitter, which is @MarkPierce82. You can find Ronin Dogs on Facebook, so I definitely recommend searching that and finding that. And Mark's website for his illustration and stuff like that, hemanisCool.tumblr.com. I don't need to spell that.
You're a certain age, aren't you?
Yeah, well, He-Man is cool.
Yeah.
Tony, you got something to say?
I've definitely been on the Tumblr.
Who was the one who had a flat head? Who was the flat-headed bloke? Who was it? Was he like... I don't know, he just used to
ram man. Ram man,
yeah.
It was Ram Man, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's also the body double for the Batman pictures on the latest Batman versus Superman poster. So Ronin Dogs, check it out, people. Chris, welcome to the show. What have you been doing, reading? We've dropped you in at the deep end this week.
No, that's all right. I've been reading the Keithley News, which is a local newspaper here. It's very interesting and exciting.
Are there aliens? Are there bum wars?
No, unfortunately not. It's surprisingly parochial yet horrific because they've got like one article is a bake sale and the next article is about how somebody got raped. Everything's thrown in. It's just like, I'm like, wow, they don't pull any punches here. Back in Illinois, if you know, the local newspaper is light. They don't go into like criminal activities and burglaries and things like that. Mm. And they do here. It's kind of surprising. I'm sort of really interested in that. So I've been reading the local newspaper for the last few months.
It's like roulette then. You just think, look at the...
Oh, yeah, I like that idea.
Look at that cake. Oh, my God. Look at that rape.
Maybe they're doing it as a sort of some kind of beat poem that we're not aware of.
It feels like that. It really does. And I've been really enjoying Agent Carter.
Oh, I love it. That's really, really good, isn't it?
I don't think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is very good. I still watch it, but I don't think it's very good. But Agent Carter is great. Oh my God, she's outstanding, and she's also kind of curvy.
Yeah,
she's not like really thin or anything like that at all.
When she punches people, you can feel it, can't you?
Yeah.
I didn't watch that because of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've really gone off Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's really mediocre.
It's a sequel to the first Captain America movie in many ways. You know, the Howling Commandos are in
give it a try then.
It's definitely worth it. I haven't seen all of Agent Carter. I got to episode 5. How many episodes are there in the first series?
It's about 9 or something, is it? I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm just watching them
on TV at the moment. Yeah,
there's a broadcasting here.
That's right. Same as me. Yeah, yeah, they're out on Channel 5 or something, aren't they? I think.
Fox. It's on Fox.
Fox, you're right. Yeah, apologies. Yeah, yeah. No, really good. Yeah, no, and it's all one big story, and it's awesome. I really like it, I have to say.
Yeah, how many episodes have you got in, Chris?
I think it's 4. However many they've shown, they were just in, was it Russia or Ukraine?
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't remember exactly where. And they had the Howling Commandos in there again, and it's really cool. And they seem to do a lot with not much of a budget.
Yeah, that guy plays, is it Dum Dum Duggan? He is just brilliant in it, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, really good.
He's been in so much stuff. And
what's that sort of detective series set in the southern states of America with the guy who's in Deadwood? Sort of redneck.
Justified.
He's been in that recently, hasn't he?
No, has he?
He was in Minority Report as well.
Of course.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah, and the Street Fighter film All About Trinity. Yeah. Yeah, I knew that was the one you'd know, Dan.
Bison. He was also in The Rock Walking Tall remake. Can you beat the shit film of that.
I can, because Walking Tall 2 has got Kevin Sorbo in it, and that's the sign of a truly shit film.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Fuck, Hercules. He was Hercules.
Yeah.
And then he became a sort of bit of a right-wing geezer, didn't he?
He did that fucking atheist. Is it all God is Dead or something?
Is
God
he?
God is Not Dead. He did that crappy film.
Oh, he did that rubbish, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he very religious and conservative, both?
I think he might be, yeah. Doesn't that go hand in hand in your good country?
It does, yeah.
It makes you wonder if he took the paycheck over his beliefs. I don't know, that's just absolute speculation. Yeah, for Hercules.
Well, that guy from Firefly as well, the guy that played Jane is super conservative in that job as well.
Yeah. Right. Oh, what's his name? Oh, he's a Baldwin, isn't he?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. He's in the last season of Angel, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was always that way, though.
Yeah. He is that character he played in Full Metal Jacket. Do you remember that?
Yeah, Animal.
Yeah. Come on, you guys, other people must know that other than me and Dan. Come on, you guys must know that he was in Full Metal Jacket.
I didn't know. I didn't think he was old enough.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
He's the big psychopath, doesn't he?
He's got the big M60.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like a 1985 film, something like that, isn't it? Yeah, maybe he's older.
Yeah.
He's got to be... I thought he was maybe in his early 30s. I didn't think he was...
He's a tale as old as time.
Honestly, Jane is like just... I love Jane as a character. I'm really...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shame
there's no more Firefly. But,
So, okay. we totally just got into a
bit of a tangent.
A bit of a pub conversation then, didn't we? We were just sort of like all sat around going, yeah. So, Agent Carter. Anything else, Chris? Or is it...
Yeah, that's it. Comic book-wise, I picked up the Fatale. It's the most recent Fatale trade, but it's, let's see, hold on, it's written right here. It's number 5, book 5. Right. Have you guys read Fatale?
I've read the first trade, but it's Brubaker.
I've read the fade out, but I've not
Sean
gone
Phillips
back
and Ed Brubaker.
Sean Phillips, magnificent.
Yeah, he's the artist. I really like his stuff. It's very noir, but it's got this kind of Lovecraftian twist to it.
Yeah,
it has, doesn't it? Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Right, so there you go, folks. So I think without further ado, it's time to ask Chris about his book. So, Chris, we're going to give you the eternal question. Transreality, pitch it to us.
Pitch it to you?
Oh, yes. You're behind a convention table. Three men have approached you. They may not be wanted by the law.
Sweaty men.
That will be the sequel, right?
It's... the first book was it's a science fiction graphic novel that takes place in about 150, 200 years in the future, and people are living mostly digitally. They've been transferred from physical bodies into digital bodies, and they live in virtual worlds and simulated realities, and then from those realities, they're able to download into physical bodies and interact with the physical world. And this fella, who is from Yorkshire in 2013, dies, his brain is frozen, and then he doesn't know this, obviously. His brain is frozen, and then it's scanned. The frozen brain is scanned at a molecular level, and then they're able to make a three-dimensional representation of it in this virtual environment and give him a virtual body, so he is just as real as he would be. I mean, some of the brain is damaged from the freezing process, but man, this is some dry stuff I'm talking about right now.
No, this small segment, you're making this podcast sound infinitely more intelligent than it actually is.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, so carry on.
Good. And he starts off in a simulated reality because an entertainer who builds historical simulated realities bought his consciousness off of a black market and just stuck him into this program that she made. So it's of his hometown, based on some of his memories that he had before, but she hasn't quite perfected it yet. So she's running the simulation with him in it, and he doesn't know that he's in a simulation. He finds out that he is in a simulation, and then he's able to get out of it and get into the real world, which is called the United Colonies, which doesn't include Earth, actually, because there's a whole other thing going on with Earth. He's on the moons of Saturn and Jupiter and Uranus, and that's kind of where the story takes place.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I find that element of him knowing, finding out that he's not in the real world, as it were, because there's like an element of sophism, isn't there? Like, because the fact his brain was slightly damaged, it was slightly off for him.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you would never know what you weren't in the real Do you know what I mean? If you were a brain in a jar and all the world was happening around you as it is, there's no way of knowing that or proving that.
Of course.
No. So that's a good angle. Like, I really enjoyed that.
It's, I mean, well, it's not new, but it's something that, you know, a lot of people have used. You never know if you're even really, some people theorize that we're actually all in a computer program. Yeah. And that's what physics is going to eventually figure out, that, oh, wait, this isn't real. There's a whole other universe that exists outside of ours and we're just part of a simulated reality.
Everyone but me is a robot. I rely on that idea.
I think everyone's a ghost.
That's a good one. I like that. But your robots would say that, wouldn't they?
I do not know what you mean, 01001. So, Chris, I mean, you've got the basic setup of the guy that he's not, the world he's living in is not actually the real world, and then he's woken up to this entire world. Yeah. Like you say, that on the face of it, that's something that's been done before. But with transreality, it goes in such a direction that I did not expect. Because the story starts, and it's got a real nice sort of very cinematic sort of pacing, actually, the way that you bring him in, and then he's woken up to this whole world. That when everything sort of went widescreen, that's the best way to sort of say it. Yeah. You know, his world went widescreen and like full colour. And this, the colours in this book are, you know, it's just crazy and astonishing. So,
thanks.
Yeah, it's a totally different way of doing it. So I think my question is, how on earth did you think of all this?
Well, I like transhumanism fiction. The first thing that I read was Accelerando by Charles Stross, which is a free book. You can download it from his website. He's had it for free for years. It's a novel. And it sort of talks about these types of things and takes it in a bunch of different directions. There's another really good book called Incursion that I've read by Tony Bellisante. Boy, what's his last name? Tony, it's a very long kind of Italian-sounding last name. That's a good book, Incursion, as well. But there's just a whole genre of there. Do you know role-playing games at all?
Hello.
Yeah, there's a game called Eclipse Phase that came out a few years ago, which is all about this type of stuff where people can download into different bodies. They can store their memories, so if they die, they're able to bring their memories back online. And just this idea, there's just so many things to explore with it that was exciting to me. And I wanted to make it a little bit more relatable, though, because a lot of the stories that I've read, they're pretty out there, and the character is also from this world. And I thought it would be a much more interesting way to explain these things and to think about these ideas to have a person from the past living in this future. So that, because obviously he's our eyes and we have his perspective coming into it. So it's easier to understand what's going on when, you know, you explain things to him, you're explaining things to the audience. And
he's sort of like the everyman, kind of like with him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I find that a lot of the fiction that I've read, they just kind of throw you into the deep end. Mm. And when I wrote this, I was trying to write it so that my parents would understand. Well, my dad reads comic books, but my mom would understand it.
Right.
It was good.
So, I mean, to me, it's all good science fiction is about the individual. And I think in a story, okay, it's like a huge sort of, you've got some huge ideas, but it's about identity to me.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, retaining that sense of self, I suppose, you know,
almost. Yeah.
And it's something, I mean, I'm a big fan of Philip K. Dick and the sort of William Gibson and all these sort of people. Right. And the center of their books, whilst they may be a sort of astoundingly brilliant in the ideas department, the basis is, you know, in Do Androids Dream Electric Sheep and Flow My Tears, a policeman said, is all about the personality of the person. It's about the identity.
Yeah.
And that's what I really latched onto, because even when he's, you know, he's in different forms. I won't ruin it for everyone, but to me, he's in different forms throughout the book, isn't he? He takes different physical forms in a way.
Yeah.
Was Philip K. Dick an influence of yours? Or?
Yeah, for sure. Directly when I was reading this story, I wasn't trying to curb anything from him at all. But I've read his stuff. I've read, you know, Bradbury and Asimov and all that. Years ago, and so it's all just part of me. So I'm sure that comes through in the story. But you're right. Identity is what's really important about this story. I mean, the character's main arc is just trying to figure out who he is in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how is he going to fit into this world, and also like what makes you human and what how do we define that? And when technology gets to that point, it gets really blurry to figure out what it is to be be human. So, in fact, one of the characters in there is a gorilla that has been genetically engineered to be smart and can speak.
See, that's one of the things that when I was reading it, it's like, oh, there's a pink gorilla that can talk, and it's wild. Yeah. It fits with this digital. You've created a digital world, like you have like this double page spread at one point where he's in like this digital realm.
And there's
sort of like, you know, there's advertising boards, and in the background there's like, I think, some sort of green orangutan, and like people dressed in different sort of colors and shapes. And so immediately, you know, anything goes in that world. So the pink gorilla made total sense, and it's also a fantastic character. But there is more to it. Is it Alexis? Is that who?
Alexis,
saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
How did you think of the pink gorilla? Where did you
I wanted a character in there that was flesh and blood, that because she's got a physical body primarily. Because a lot of people that in this world, they don't even have physical bodies. They exist purely digitally, and because it's expensive to have a physical body, because you have to have a space to keep it, you have to maintain it, and, you know, just like all those other things. So only a very small percentage of the people have actual physical bodies, but she has her physical body. But what's different about her is that she can think and talk, and she's just like a person in that regard, but physically she's a gorilla. And I kind of addressed that at one point where, I guess, their sexuality kind of comes into question, where she sort of hits on the main character, and then to him, he's repulsed by the idea of it. But
he's coming around. I'll get.
But I like to explore that idea of like, well, if she can talk and she can think, and she's funny and interesting, then what difference does her physical form make, really?
Yeah.
So it's, again, exploring that idea of what is human. Like, I would consider her human in a very ideologicalized sort of...
Yeah. She's one of the most human characters in it. Apart from if you take the main character out of the equation, she's probably the most human of all the characters in it. You know,
and she's definitely the most grounded. She's sort of that character that helps him, but she also fits that role as... She's the one that's most comfortable with who she is. She doesn't have an arc. Her arc is helping other people through their arcs.
But also a little bit duplicitous as well. You know, for a while there, you don't know what her angle is. And then she says, well, because I want to fuck the company up, basically.
Yeah.
Well,
right. Yeah. But she could do that other ways. She is basically...
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a good person.
Because she's brought in at one point where he's like being talked to by someone else, like who's trying to con him into something.
Yeah, trying to him over.
Yeah. And she's the one that sort of stops it. And because like she's stopping someone else sort of messing him around, there is that sort of doubt that's in the back of your mind initially, like, oh, is she just trying to
working another angle?
Working another angle. I love the character of her.
To be fair, it's like the same. I work up London, and sometimes I see tourists about to get fucked over.
Oh,
and
you
sort of say, no, don't do this.
Oh, you step in?
Yeah.
Good for you.
He dresses like a giant pink gorilla, and then he just he just walks straight
in. And then he demands sex.
Offering my sexual services.
No, wait a minute, this has changed. I don't know if I can condone this any longer.
There's lots of great things about the book, but the fact that you've got the character so well-grounded, and you can really feel that he's come from Yorkshire, and that really kind of...
Yeah. Well, I live here now in Yorkshire, and for me, it's an exotic location, but I live here, so I have access to it. I feel like I've gotten to know it. I've been here for over 5 years now, and it's very different from the U.S., and I thought it's of him being a small-town guy, and I was going to originally base it him from my small town, and I was like, why not here? I've never heard of a story being based out of Yorkshire. Besides, well, like Wuthering Heights or anything like that. Yeah. But any modern storytelling doesn't seem to really hit these small post-industrial towns that are up here, and there's a ton of them. So I thought that was interesting to have that. And then anything that I wasn't sure about, some of the dialogue stuff, I just asked my father-in-law, he's a very proud Yorkshireman. So there were certain things in my script that I reworded because he goes, no, nobody would say that. That doesn't...
Yeah.
You would say this. And yeah. I go, oh, okay. That makes
sense. That's one of the things, because like, there's a, and you find this with the big two a lot of the time, when like an American, and it's the same when an English writer writes an American one, but when you're writing an accent or a dialogue, some people try too hard and it comes across like really, you know, if you're a British person reading this comic and you're just sort of like, well, no, I don't think, you know, that's obviously someone trying to sound like a dialogue that they've never really hung around.
I've got a Spider-Man comic where Spider-Man comes to London to fight these two guys, Night and Fog. And London is misty and foggy, and the coppers are running around going, oh, bloody hell, mate. Yeah, and all this stuff. And it's like, fuck's sake.
Claremont stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Is London not like that then? I always thought London was like that.
Because you live in a field, you don't understand.
Do you guys read Marvel comics? I mean, are you?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Do you remember in Civil War when Thing went to France?
Oh, yeah. And
there were like these French superheroes that were, I thought, really funny, but pretty offensive, I think.
And they were like, Jutta Law, he has no penis.
Well, it was like, there was like the baguette guy and, you know, like the stripy shirt. Do you remember? It was just,
fuck.
I remember thinking about it going, I mean, it was funny, but Marvel just has no regard for French people whatsoever. They just don't care. It's like, they're not going to read our comic books. Let's just rip them.
I mean, years ago, Marvel tried to introduce like almost a character per country, didn't they? Mm. So they had like an Irish character who had a four-leaf clover on her chest. And, you know, it's just like, oh, God. Yeah, it's like...
Awful.
Yeah.
But back to your book, Chris. Thankfully, there's no one like this. There's no one like that in Tragic Reality.
One point of the story, when they all kind of come out of their kind of induced reality, and... there's one character that kind of that says, I don't want this. You know what I mean? He kind of gives it up straight away. And it's good to see that kind of anger of it, because I'd imagine a lot of people would kind of take that option. It's a dark one, because...
When he says no more, that guy, he just says, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, no, really, really good. That was the point. I was reading it. Chris, we're in a bit of a sort of a Twitter group, and I messaged the two guys saying, this is awesome. Love this book. Oh, it was at that point, you know. Because you take an idea and you don't go the Matrix way, which is you have a great idea and then you just turn it into a load of fights. You keep going with it to me. It keeps rolling and it keeps changing throughout the book. Bravo. Really, really good.
Thank you so much. Yeah. That's why I really want to do this next book, is because I feel like I just scratched the surface on all the crazy things that can happen and ideas that would you'd have to deal with living in this kind of world.
Yeah.
And they have... The United Colonies, where most of the story takes place, is pretty conservative compared to what other people are doing out in the rest of the solar system. So
you make mention at the end of the book, don't you, I think?
Yeah. I was trying to set it up for a sequel.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more to do.
Yeah, it does have the, like, you've got the nice sort of first story, the first movie, as it were. And it finishes at a point where there's a happy ending. Can we say this is kind of a happy ending? In a sense, but there's also the let's go on another adventure kind of moment. So they're all setting off and, you know, onto the next book, as it were. And you're ready. By then, you're in the world and you're just like, right, bring it on. Let's see the next story.
There's a funny thing about happy endings is that they all depend on, I think Chad, my friend Chad said this to me once, who was on the show. He might have even said it on the show. It's happy endings all depend on where you stop.
Right. Yeah.
Because if you eventually all of our endings are not happy. We all die. We all have somebody or somebody else dies.
Oh, Jesus. But Christ. Like
I've had a few happy endings.
Well, I mean
just like that, we're back to the usual format.
Sorry, Chris.
It's good. It's really good. In fact, if you would give me some more details about that.
This is the point where like it edits and like there's just sort of, like real charming music, and then it cuts back to Tony going, and then I was covered in blood.
One thing I was going to ask you about, Chris, is the your Kickstarter experience, because in the front of the book you've got a great big list of people, obviously your backers, and they've appeared in the book. That must have been a great thing for them to
I hope so. I've got surprisingly, I didn't get as much response back as I was hoping from people that were in there. But everybody that I wrote, because I was like, did you like it? Was it okay? And they're like, oh, yeah, it was great, man. So cool. And I'm like, why didn't you write me?
Let me say something.
Why didn't you? So So a few people did write, but I felt like a lot of other people I just didn't hear from. And I guess it's one of those things where they did it years ago, or not years ago, but over a year ago. They gave me the money, sent me the pictures, did all the stuff, did the book. They finally get it, and they're looking like, oh, that's neat. And then that's probably where it stops. One person, however, ordered 20 copies of the book.
Wow.
And to give to their friends and family because they were so into the fact that they were.
You say book. On this issue too, you should, I'll put you in for free. And then you've got another 20 copies.
Yeah.
So this person bought loads of books with a picture of themselves in to give to their relatives. Yeah,
yes, okay. I guess.
I mean, it's nice for you, but I wouldn't want to be his relative. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Well, I mean, it's a good book.
Yeah, it's a good book.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's why we've got you on it.
If I don't, you know, if I don't say so myself, I think it's a pretty good book.
No, it's a great book.
I really enjoyed it.
Which, I mean, leads me, I mean, I've been listening to your podcast this week, the Lovecraft one you do.
Yeah.
And you're a big Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard guy.
Yeah.
And the two are very different to me, almost.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a line for the between the two, or do you see a sort of connection?
Well, they're connected in the sense that they write, they corresponded with each other, and they were correspondent.
Between Lovecraft and that sort of book and this book that you've
read. I see. I thought you meant Robert E. Howard.
No, yeah.
I can talk about that, sure. But no. I would say there isn't really that much of a connection. It's a completely separate interest that I have. Lovecraft sort of had this cosmic view of, I wouldn't even say an uncaring universe. It would be malevolent universe, nice. Where there are forces greater than us that exist out there, but they're pretty evil, and they either don't care about you or they want to eat you. So that's Lovecraft's universe. In this universe, there's nothing like that. It kind of takes our world and then just sort of extrapolates on it. There are advanced artificial intelligences that exist that are almost godlike that, you know, I don't deal with in the book at all, because I don't, how much have you guys read much about transhumanism stuff and
artificial a little bit about it.
Well, there's the idea of the weak superintelligence and the strong superintelligence.
Right.
And how
go on, Chris, let's teach some people.
Okay. Yeah. So the weak superintelligence is just basically us, but we can think a little bit faster and we can access information quicker. And we're sort of becoming a weak superintelligence already with our cell phones and the internet and being able to tap into this information and solve problems and figure things out much quicker than we ever could before. But we're still people, and we still think like people think, and we experience time, and we have three dimensions and all of these things. Now, with artificial intelligence, it is theorized. I'm not one of these people that thinks that artificial intelligence is awesome, cool, super artificial intelligence is 5 years in the future. I think it's going to be pretty far off before something like that happens. But once it does, a strong superintelligence will think in ways that we will not be able to understand at all. It'll be like a dog trying to understand what a human does when they go to a computer.
That's totally how I feel on every single episode of this.
So, looking at the weak superintelligence versus the strong superintelligence, if it's an AI that becomes a strong superintelligence, we're not going to understand its motives, what it does, how it thinks, all of those things. It'll be able to run circles around us, and things like Terminator and all that. Like, they're not going to bother trying to exterminate humans because we just won't be an issue for them. They'll be able to work around us and do whatever it is that they need to do.
I think that was one of the issues that was it Hawking that brought up, that essentially they might just roll over us with no consideration. Not that it'd be malevolent or kind of an idea, but this, like, we're just going to do that, and then you've wiped out half of humanity. That was never considered or irrelevant to it.
You know, there was a cool, if you saw that movie Her.
I've heard about it. Okay.
Oh yeah, it's really good, and it touches, it's surprisingly a super cool sci-fi film that all of the conflicts are emotional. That's kind of ruining the end of the movie. I don't know if it necessarily, but there's some talk of super intelligences going communicating with people because they have relationships with people, and they're going, oh, I'm going to go someplace else and I'm not going to be around anymore. And he's like, where are you going? And she's like, well, I can't really explain to you where I'm going. It won't make sense to you. So just hopefully someday you'll be able to come to where I am, but you can't right now. And he's like, I don't get it. And she's like, yeah, you can't.
You can't. Yeah.
And I think that's what will happen eventually with some kind of intelligent system will think beyond us. But then other people theorize that human intelligence is as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about. And he says, hopefully that's not the case, that we'll be able to get smarter and be able to think in ways that we haven't thought before. But it's possible that this is it. This is as good as it gets.
I guess if you kind of transhuman and you start kind of integrating technology into your body.
Yeah.
And you could kind of have some kind of hive mind that could, I don't know.
The concept you have of doing three things at once, and, you know, I'm off surfing. I wonder, you know, is there that much time in the world to do stuff in the human brain? You know, Grant Morrison says that, you know, conspiracy theories are all false because we haven't actually got that much time to do all this.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, I think conspiracy theories are wrong because people can't keep their mouth shut.
Yeah.
People just love to talk about everything, especially something that's secret.
And write a novel about it. And all this sort
of thing. I also think it's about having answers. Do you know what I mean? Because they don't understand the situation and how could this happen? And it's got to, here's the explanation. It really is worthless.
Yeah, and I also think it's about control, where if something happens and you think that the conspiracy is behind it, then that shows that somebody's in control of the event, like the 9/11 conspiracy, where it's like, oh, the government organized it and they wanted it to happen. And in a way, that makes it not as bad because the people that are in charge and protecting us are the ones that allowed it to happen. So ultimately, it's not something that's going to really hurt us. So it's okay in a way. And that's what most of these conspiracy theories are, or JFK's assassination. Like, just one guy with a gun was able to kill the president. That's horrible if you really think about that. But if you make it a conspiracy, then it's, well, okay, that makes more sense because it took all of these people to orchestrate his downfall, and
it's more palatable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's almost all conspiracy theories are like that.
So you're not going to write a conspiracy theory book anytime soon, is that what we're...
No.
there
was one that I really liked, that Abraham Lincoln never existed as a real person. He was a fabrication of the United States government, and he was played by a number of different actors. And John Wilkes Booth was up for the part, and he didn't get the part, and he was going to... show the conspiracy. He was going to reveal the conspiracy by assassinating this actor that was currently playing Lincoln, but then they killed him before he was able to talk about it.
I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's ridiculous.
It's like that issue of Hellblazer. Do you ever remember it where he sits at a bar and just recounts numerous conspiracy theories to some, you know, sort of idiot at the bar who believes it all, you know, all the royal family of lizards. You know, we went through the full gambit of it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting back onto the branching, you brought that up before. And you've mentioned it in the video for the new Kickstarter, which we'll talk about in a short while. But branching works in the fact that, like, you split off, your digital body splits off into two, you know, into several different versions. They go off and do stuff. Mm-hmm. But then they come back. When they come back to the original, you've then got all the memories of what they did, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, so it integrates. They call when your branch comes back into your body, it integrates into your system, into your body, and your memories, so that you will have memories of whatever it did as well.
What inspired that idea? Just never having enough time to do what you want?
Well, I mean, it seemed like one of the, just kind of extrapolating the idea, if you can make yourself digital, then why couldn't you make a digital copy of yourself? Mm. And then if you can make a digital copy of yourself, what's the benefit of that? And I would think that you don't want a bunch of different versions of yourself running around. You would want to be able to do something else and then take whatever it did and then bring it back to the main intelligence. So that was it. I just kind of thought about it and then thought this would be the best way and the most useful way to do it. So that's what they did in this world. I don't know if it really is, obviously. I'm just a guy writing story, but in the story, it seems to work out pretty cool. So
that works great. Yeah. Have you got like a wall in your house that's just lots of scribbles and, you know, lines drawn across it? And, you know?
I wish I did. Those are so cool. The conspiracy, like with the strings tied to the pegs. Yeah. No, I don't have any of those.
How do you keep your kind of the story and kind of the branches and all different story arcs on focus? How do you go about planning that?
When I write, I do a outline, a pretty serious outline initially, with my scenes and my beats to try and keep the arc. I follow a pretty narrative film structure, you know, three act structure. I try to at least. Right. Sometimes it doesn't quite work in comic books, but it surprisingly works well in comic books.
Oh, I think the pacing, the dramatic pacing, and the way it does work is very cinematic and does work in the comic book format.
Yeah.
I mean, I think yours works as a graphic novel to me. I wouldn't find it perhaps in issues it would work as well, because it's such an information dump, your story in a way, that I preferred reading it in one go, you know?
Yeah, big time. That makes sense. Yeah.
Is that why you chose to do it as one graphic novel rather than...
It did, yeah, because when I wrote it as one story, and to break it up into 20 pages or 25 pages or whatever it would be. There's 120 pages of story.
Right.
So yeah, I'd have to break it up. So if I didn't 20, well, anyway, to break it up like that, there would have been artificial breaks. Like it would just, and then that's a whole other structuring method that you need to do, because then you kind of have to make it into five acts or four acts. And then it just didn't gel that way for me. So from a writing standpoint, it was just easier to make it one long story in one book.
Which is quite a daunting prospect when you start just to think, right, I'm just going to create a 120 page graphic novel.
I've never had a problem with like writer's block. I'm always just do it. Just write, even if it's bad. You just get it out of your system, and then once it's out, you could go back and rewrite. And as long as I feel like that's always, because I think writer's block is about being afraid, like you're going to make a mistake, or it's not good, and you doubt yourself.
It's a stupid amount of perfectionism sometimes. I mean, back a couple of years ago, I used to write scripts, and I get to a certain point and I want it to be perfect, and you go back to tweak something and you've already lost as soon as you go back when you haven't finished it. Do you know what I mean? You get to the you get a third through and you just think, actually, I could tighten up the beginning. No, just keep going. Keep going, finish the whole thing, and you can tighten it up.
Yeah, there's this great I heard it from Robert Rodriguez, who got it from I think it's The Artist Way. It was a book that he read. It was on one of his film schools. Okay. He was talking about this, and he said that there was this study that a pottery class was doing, where they told half the pottery class to make one pot over the whole course of the 6-week lessons. And they told the other half of the class to make as many pots as they possibly could. And at the end of it, everybody that made the best pot, the one best pot they could, theirs weren't very good. And everybody that did the most of them, they were all far superior to the people that did those.
Yeah.
And it's because going through the whole process, this is the lesson that you're supposed to learn from this, going through the whole process is how you really learn what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the more you go through that whole process, the better you're going to be at your craft. Because sometimes the stuff you're doing at the beginning, it's going to foreshadow, or it's going to lead into whatever it is that you're getting into the end. But if you never get to that end, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
At the beginning of it. So you just got to push through, even if it's complete crap, just get it out of your system and then go back and do it.
It's weird. Before I started on Vanguard, I kind of clocked, I wasn't good enough to kind of do the story I wanted to do. So I kind of got in touch with a writer and basically just did a 5-issue webcomic to get myself up to speed. And then once that was kind of behind me, I was like, right, I can do my thing now.
Yeah.
But using stuff that same philosophy.
As well, you know, the ideas are one thing, you know, but being proficient at translating them onto the page, you know, is another thing, but isn't it? So the ideas will always be there for you later on as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And you say in your Kickstarter video that, like, you've learned a lot from the first book. I mean, obviously you've got this nice finished book you're pleased with, but I'm sure, like all of us, you'll look at your finished work and you'll think, I could have done that bit better.
Shit. It's shit. My book is shit.
Are you on the it's shit bit? Because people go, it's brilliant, it's shit, it's brilliant, it's shit, don't they? You know, there's that site.
I mean, I think I did a good job, and I when I think it's a good read, and when I go through it, I think the writing is stronger than the art, for one. I'm a horrible artist when it comes to that stuff. I think that, and the reviews that I got all pretty much said the same thing, that the story's great, the art's eh. But for me, I don't have... it was my job to do this, so I could try and use that money to hire an artist, but then I would have to find another job for myself. But I like to draw as well, and I had an idea of how I wanted to do it, which was I used a lot of photography, and I did it that way. I went to a talk with Tony Harris, is that his name? Yeah, the guy that did Ex Machina and all that stuff. Starman as well. Well, that's what he did, and I was just like, oh, wow. Because for me, because I come from a filmmaking background, that photography works for me. So if I can take pictures of people, it really helps me visualize what it is that I want to do. So I started doing that. And when I saw that he did it, and that it's okay, that it doesn't matter what your process is, it matters what's on the page. And if it works, then it works. And it almost works for me.
Well, I mean, I think it works, especially for the story. I'm totally bought into it. But talking about your art process, it's a very clean looking line, and what is your process? Do you sketch it? Do you take it in Illustrator, or how do you work out a page?
First I do a rough thumbs from the script, sketching, and I do everything in Manga Studio.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, cool. I don't do anything physical anymore. I got hooked up with Ian J. Colbard? I met, he did our book, Deadbeats. He did the artwork for it, and I learned a lot about writing books. I love Deadbeats as well. I wish I could take more. I mean, I wrote half of it, but it's such a collaborative.
Yeah,
it's so collaborative when you're working with another writer and an artist. Like, all these different things come from these different people, and you're like, oh my God, it's so much bigger than anything that I could have done on my own, I feel like. But they're really talented. But Ian, just because he lives over in Nottingham, which is not too far away from where I live, I decided to go meet him and hang out with him. And he was super cool, super nice guy. And we became friends. And he uses Manga Studio for everything that he does as well. And I was just like, would you give me like kind of a tutorial? Would you help me out? Show me your process and things. And so I spent a whole day with him in a studio, and he just showed me what to do and how he does it. I shouldn't show me what to do. He showed me how he does things. And then I took that and was able to do my own stuff. And I never would have done that without his encouragement and his...
What a dude.
Oh, yeah. He's
what a dude. Yeah.
He's great.
I recently... It's not an expensive program either, is it, Manga Studio?
No, it's not. There's a cheaper, like the basic one, which is like, I don't know, $50 or something like that.
I think that must be the one I got. I mean, I have yet to use it. I haven't gone digital, and I don't use a tablet, or I'd love to have a Cintiq one day. That's the dream, but they're quite expensive. But I think like they were doing a sale at one point where it was only like $15. And I just thought, well, I want to get used to it and buy it. I mean, I haven't touched it yet, but I've got it. Is it an easy to use program, would you say?
I think so. There's a lot of support and a lot of online tutorial videos as well. So you can just go on to their YouTube page, and they just show you how to set up panels, how to do your measurements, all that, how to do word balloons. Yeah. And it's really simple. I mean, one of the tools I really like in there is the line tool, because you can like do points and connect to that. And it also has some perspective where you can set your perspective points, and it'll draw to the perspective line.
Yeah,
that's a really amazing thing.
Yeah, that must really help. I hate perspective.
Oh, it really helps a lot, and especially if you like. Well, when I did my photography, because most of the background, obviously the backgrounds aren't real, but I would have points in the background when I took the pictures to know what the perspective was, like where the horizon was and all that. And then I would set my horizon lines to the photograph's horizon lines and the perspective points to it. So everything all worked out most of the time. Sometimes I had to cheat and I didn't do that. But
so quite a lot of meticulous planning then went into every page. I'm not even joking. I genuinely mean that.
The integration of the kind of the images and the background, I think, works really well. It's kind of the perspective really works. I mean, there's times when I see people doing like the stuff over 3D or kind of like their own backgrounds, and it's off, and it doesn't look, it's not quite there.
Yeah.
You've done well.
I try. And it could be better. There are certain times. I finally bought that book. There's a book about drawing in perspective, and the name of it, I can't remember. There's one. It's the comic book about drawing in perspective. And there's some strange rules about perspective that I never realized.
Is it Perspective for Comic Book Artists?
I think that's what it's called, yeah.
By David Chelsea.
Yep, that's it. That's
a brilliant book.
Yeah, it's really good. Just certain things that I didn't think about how... if there's like a certain framing of a perspective thing, but once you go out of that framing, your perspective will get wonky because it's not how people's vision works. So if you took a photograph of something and then you made your photograph smaller or bigger, I'm trying to remember which way it is, smaller or bigger in the panel, it'll make your perspective all wonked out. Like all of your objects towards the edges will look unnatural because that's not how perspective is. So you have to really remember those things when you got to read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just a general motto. You have to read the book, people. It's a great book. I mean, you say about the photo ref and stuff, but the background work, there's so many different wild and wonderful things that are going on in the background with the colors and stuff. Like you have these jungles and there's photo reference, but where did you get photo reference for a giant purple bird creature?
Oh,
Tony, keep quiet.
Barney.
that was my penis. I use my penis as a reference. Yeah. No.
It has a beak.
No. Yeah, it does. That's strange. The I used a 3D model of a bird that I took all the feathers off of. And then I modified it and changed it around, as in like I messed with the, I didn't mess with the model itself. I messed with the drawing. I just used the 3D model as the basis. It was a featherless bird that I had stretched out, like made its neck longer. I think it was some kind of seabird with like a blue beak or something like that, that I used for the gorilla. Obviously I don't know any gorillas to model for me. So I used a 3D model of a gorilla.
You might after this show.
I don't like the facial expressions that the 3D models come with because they're pretty bunk. So I used my own face for the gorilla's facial expressions. Right. So I used a picture of, but I didn't trace those. I would just, because the person, you know, obviously my face structure is totally different than that of a gorilla, but I would do the face that I wanted on my webcam, and then I'd use that as reference for the gorilla, so which I think actually worked out pretty well.
No, it did.
It worked great. Yeah.
The thing I noticed is you get a lot. I'm going to cite Strange Haven if you've ever heard of that book.
No.
Like Gary Spencer Millage.
No. What is that?
It's a book which is the faces are very similar to yours in that they're very sort of photorealistic, you know. Mm-hmm. What I found better about your book is in his, he's obviously got lots of photographs of his friends that he uses in his art. But for you, the reaction shots, you know, the expressions seem to be very spot on for the scene.
Yeah.
Which must be quite difficult to come across, or?
Well, I made them do it. I had people model for me, friends mostly for the first book. I think I might have hired a couple of just local actors to come in and do some stuff. But I direct them like I was directing a short film, you know, like... This is cool. This is what, you know, this is what's going on. This is how you should feel. And then I go more broad, pull it back a bit, whatever.
So you've got a background in film as well. So you know exactly how to frame it, don't you? Really?
Yeah. So that's what I tried to do because I wanted to play to my strengths, I guess.
In terms of casting, your wife plays a villain.
She does.
How did that come about?
Well... You know, I would agree that she's not a villain. I wouldn't agree. I'm sorry. I would say that she's not a villain.
Yeah. I can edit this bit to make you look awful. Don't worry.
Well, she that she has a perspective that's very different, and I think what she's offering him, even though it sounds sort of unpalatable, might actually not really be that unpalatable, and probably could be a really wonderful thing.
It's the devil's offering, isn't it, really? It's the sort of like, oh, this would be really nice for you. And then you take it and then like, oh god, this isn't as good as I thought it was going to be. Yeah,
or choose ignorance, wouldn't they?
Yeah, so, it would be ignorance. That's what it would be, going back to not knowing, and not knowing he might actually be happier. And she says in there that it's a process for her to make his reality more real, and that he sticks around and helps her make it more real, she'll reboot him and then he won't know, and he'll never even know that he had a problem. And this will go on in her simulated reality. Then she can have her guests that pay to use her system come in and experience this small northern town, and he can just live in it and it's fine. And to her, it makes it more real and he's happy living his life, and that's it. Hmm. So it's not really, I mean, if that's what your evil villain is trying to do, it's like, well, that's not so bad, really. But
she's doing it for her own end, though, which is kind of the slant, isn't it? That it kind of makes her a little bit diabolic in the fact that she's,
sure.
It's not like clear cut. She's a bad girl, but yeah.
But my wife,
it's all about motivations, isn't it? I suppose
it is. It is definitely about what is motivating the character to do everything that they're doing. And just the only reason my wife did it because I thought she would. She's a good performer. My wife acts and stuff, or used to act when we lived in Los Angeles. And she was in a few short films that I did. And so I know that she's good for that kind of stuff. And for getting the facial expressions that I was looking for, I knew that I can get them out of her. And I did. And
cool. Did she like read over the script and stuff as well?
Yeah. So she gives me feedback. And
Incredible, isn't it? Because I've kind of got this image of this sort of LA family transported to a small town in Yorkshire. You ringing up people and saying, can you just come around, just do some acting around my house?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's a few ecky thumps being thrown in there, aren't there?
Ecky thumps.
I've met a guy who does videos around here. He lives in Leeds. And I think he's funny. He's read for our show as well. He's done voice stuff. He's just brilliant. His name's Greg Johnson, and it's Greig.
Recently, don't you? Yeah, yeah.
And I love his. I'm really good friends with him now, and we're gonna shoot some other projects. Oh, he did my video for the new Kickstarter.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
it's a great video.
Which I think is a step up from my last video because I did that all myself. And he's got a lot more experience with that than I do. And
I like the version of you with the hat on. That's my.
Which makes a brilliant segue, because obviously we've been talking about trans reality and how much we love it, and how all you people out there should get a hold of this because it's great. But there is another copy on its way, and Chris, we have faith in you, brother.
Yeah, well,
yeah. And you just launched your Kickstarter recently, didn't you?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. Tomorrow, it'll be 2 weeks tomorrow.
Yeah. So it's something definitely everyone should check out. But tell us more about your plan for book two, Trans Reality, New Worlds.
New Worlds, yeah. It's primarily the protagonist, James, from the last book, is going out of the United Colonies in search of his lost children, who never actually died. They were always, as technology got better, people lived longer, and as people lived longer, they got closer to this... singularity, I guess, is probably the word that gets bandied about. So they actually lived to the point where the singularity happened and they were immortal and they become digital, and then they've moved out of the United Colonies into the other parts of the solar system in the galaxy. So he decides that he's going to try and get out of the United Colonies to go find out where his children are and how he can reconnect with them, or if he can reconnect with them, to see what kind of things they become, because this world is, you can become anything. And the theme of this story is kind of more about what our limitations are and how our limitations make us human.
Right.
And keeping limitations is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And being limitless is kind of almost nothingness in a way. And sort of the whole book is going to be exploring that idea.
I guess you're defined by your limits.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can do anything, then what are you?
Yeah.
Tony, what are you? You can do anything.
I can. Yeah. I sometimes get caught.
Sometimes get prosecuted.
Yeah.
I was going to ask the ladybird. I'm not sure if I missed that in the book.
Yeah, I was a little too subtle with that, unfortunately. Septimus, the character that breaks James out of the first book.
He's wearing red and black, isn't he?
He's wearing red and black, and his tie is the same pattern as the ladybird.
I didn't pick up on that. Yeah,
it was too subtle. A lot of people asked me about it. They're like, what's up with the ladybirds? I was like, oh, damn it.
To me, he was the Bill and Ted guy. He was...
He does look like Rufus. Yeah, he does. Yeah. I didn't... Great. That must have been a subconscious thing that happened for me that I did that. Yeah,
For this show, I was looking at the design of his jacket, and it was such a design that I thought, that must mean, you know, it's such a distinctive look that I thought, I need to ask about this, because that obviously means something. And now that it's now you've said it...
It's so fucking obvious.
But it wasn't intentional. I didn't consciously go, I'm going to make this guy Rufus. It just was bare... I mean, and I love... Bill and Ted, excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey. Journey, I think, is actually a superior film.
Oh, I can't watch Excellent Adventure anymore. It's brilliant in my mind, but I shouldn't watch it because I don't think it dates well. Whereas Bogus Journey,
they're doing a third. There's a rumor of a third, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They're old. Brilliant. Yeah.
It's gonna be is it Bill and John Wick running around shooting people after they kill their dog or something? I'd watch that. Back to your Kickstarter, Chris.
Yeah.
It's just launched. How big is this book going to be? Is it going to be the same sort of size?
Yeah, 120 pages is what I'm planning for. And it's a strange thing doing these Kickstarters, because a big portion of the book goes into the printing and the shipping.
Mm, right.
This is it. You're the first person that we've had on during a Kickstarter. We've talked about them before, but did you learn a lot from the first one?
Yeah, absolutely. It took me longer to do a book than I thought it would, so I planned accordingly with this one to give myself more time to get it done. But the cost of shipping was much more than I anticipated with the first book, because it went up. Actually, the prices go up every so often, and it went up from the beginning of the Kickstarter to the second one. And it's trying to figure out ways of should I print it in the U.S. because a lot of my backers are in the U.S. and it would maybe that's the way to do it. But it was so hard to find a printing company that I could get on the phone with and talk to and send. Just doing that legwork because of the time difference, it was harder. I found the company that I used here, Cambrian Printers, and they're in Wales. And they do comic books, and they were really good, and their prices were really good.
Yeah, I think Avery Hill used them. I think they've spoken about them a lot, a lot of comic people use them,
I'm really happy with them, and I thought they were just really nice. Like, I wanted one of my backers, one of the guys had his picture in the book, lived in Wales, really close to the place, and he was like, could I go over and take some pictures of your book being printed so that, you know, you can show them stuff? And I was like, first of all, you're awesome for asking to do that. That's really cool. But second, do it. So I called them, and they're like, well, we don't let people in because of other stuff we're printing. There's like all these legal things. But we'll take a bunch of pictures for you.
That's brilliant.
And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And they took amazing pictures, like really nice professional photographs. And then they're on the Kickstarter, like one of my updates. I posted them when they were getting printed and things like that.
Brilliant.
But I also did videos. I did... if you go to my YouTube page, I did videos about maybe once a month about the process and what I was doing. So those are still up, and they'd show you like how I bring in my images and how I ink the images and the integrating the 3D model gorilla stuff with.
Oh, awesome.
I have to check that out. Yeah.
So that's one of the big bugbears of, you know, you see his moans on Kickstarters is, you know, can you tell me what's happening, please? It's been, you know, and I think that's a brilliant idea.
I'm a big backer of Kickstarters. I backed almost probably 100, probably close to 100
really?
Of them. Wow. I think somewhere around there. And some of them aren't successful, but a lot of them are.
And then you realize, oh God, I forgot I pledged to that. And then it comes out.
Well, sometimes it's a pleasant surprise, and there's a few that I've never, you know, never gotten anything out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the nature of the beast. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're giving somebody. Hopefully, intelligently, you're deciding that this person seems like they're going to be able to do what they say they're going to do, so I'm going to give them some money.
It is a gamble, I think, a lot of the times. You know, I know we've talked a lot about it on in the past, Chris. And there's a lot that you think, dear me, you know, that's bordering on fraudulent. You know, and then there's some that are brilliant, and you know, just professionally run. Tom Woodgard, who did Merrick the Elephant Man our second episode, and mm-hmm. he treats it properly, and he does it, you know, professionally, and that's the way you got to do it.
Don't think,
oh, I'll make a comic, I'll put that on Kickstarter tonight. You know, it's like that. Some people, I think, you know, without thinking it through.
I think also, Chris, like you've had a successful one, and you've delivered on the books, and that's an important thing. You know, you people can have faith in your Kickstarter because they'll get exactly what they're paying for, which I hope so, because I've already pledged.
Great. Yes. I hope you and many, many, many other people pledge. Yeah.
The sexy dance reward. Was that the one?
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's the one.
Just the animated GIF.
Let me type that down right now.
Donate for that.
I could do the whole tuck dance, the, you know, Buffalo Bill.
Put it in the basket.
Yeah. Because you don't really see. You don't see anything. So it's all, you know, it's above board.
That's a horrible excuse. How many people will try things with that excuse?
Clothes, who needs them? Yeah. No, genuinely, mate, really, I have to say, it was a really nice, we get sent a lot of books, and some are good and some aren't so good, and this one, genuinely, a really nice surprise. It's one good. Of the best things I've read for a while. It was very intelligent. And it took an idea a long way, and I think that's the best thing about it. Don't just have an idea and you do a comic about it. Have an idea and, you know, think about it and extrapolate it, and that's what you did on this. I really, really enjoyed it, I have to say.
Thank you so much. It's so good to hear. I love it. I hope more people get a hold of the book and feel like you do about it. And the next book, I feel like it's going to be better just because I just have a better writer now. I've written more things.
And also, you set up the basis for the world, haven't you? So you can just expand it. Yeah.
Go from there.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to do too many spoilers.
No,
but,
no, definitely.
And I hope we haven't spoiled. I don't think we've spoiled the first book too much. I don't think.
Well, nah.
No, I think what you say, the way the first book ends, it properly whet my appetite for a second book. You know, those last few pages, you think, oh, right, well, I can see this is, you know, just continue. It's great, you know. Yeah, so it's a proper science fiction epic. You know, this is the first book of a series to me. Yeah.
But I honestly think I only have one more book left with this.
Really? Right.
Yeah. Because
New Worlds is the last one, or
I think so. Well, with this particular character in the story, because I feel like that this character arc is, that's it. There's not going to be another. He'll go from being a dramatic character into an iconic character. Like he's going to be comfortable with who he is by the end of this, and I don't see any real change.
Yeah, the conflict will have gone, won't it? Yeah.
You push it any further and you've got Matrix Revolutions, haven't you? Oh, sorry about that, everyone.
So I mean, I've got other book ideas that I want to do, but I think that I didn't get everything out with this first book, and I think the second book I can get all the ideas that I want in it. Maybe I won't, because once I do the final version of it, maybe it'll spawn new ideas. But at this point, I feel like
that's the beauty of small press, though, isn't it? Like, you know, because you don't have a certain like big to, you know, some big corporate thing above you, and it's all your thing. If it decides at the end of it, I need another book, then it's in your hands to create it, isn't it, really? So where can people find the Kickstarter for Trans Reality?
Just go to Kickstarter and type in, it's a crazy URL, but if you just go to Kickstarter and type in Trans Reality, it'll be the first thing that pops up.
Yeah. Is it Trans Reality or Trans Reality New Worlds? Because I know
Either one. Yeah, the old one I think will come up as well, but they both come up.
Yeah. Well, I'll put a link on the page anyway. So, cool. And where can people get the first Trans Reality book?
You can get it at transrealitycomic.com. I had some distribution with it, but the thing with Diamond that I found out from people is that, and hopefully I don't get in trouble for saying this, is that they order a bunch, and then I've gotten calls from retailers that have said, Diamond says they're out of your book. And I was like, that's strange, because I told them I will give them as many copies as my book that if they need anymore. I've got a whole garage full of them. Just say the word. But what I guess, and I've heard from other people, is that Diamond won't order any more books unless it's a big order comes in.
Right, yeah.
So unless 500 people want books for 500 books worth of stores want books, then they won't order anymore. So
yeah, they've got a limit. They've had that for a while now, I think.
It's been frustrating, especially because people would like the book, and buying it in the United States, it's cost more to ship it. It's like £7.40 to ship it to the United States.
Yeah.
And the book retails for 10. Mm. So, I mean, in America, it's almost double the price. So that's like almost $30.
Well, that stopped me pledging on some Kickstarters. I'll go on an American book and I just think, this looks brilliant. Oh, that's a good price for the book. And then when I look at the postage, I'm just sort of like, no, I can't.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Have you done the American cons with it? Have you done Wizard World would be your local one there, would it, in Illinois or
Chicago? Chicago, they have the Wizard World. But I live in Yorkshire now, and I've got my children are Englishmen, so...
Yeah, it's just you got one Thought Bubble things. Coming up, have you? Or are you
yes,
do
I do. I'm not going to do it this year, just because I don't really have anything new to push. I've been with when Transreality came out the first time, so it would just be me with a copy of the Transrealities, because Self-Made Heroes there, and they've got Deadbeats already. Mm. So I've gone on their table and done signings with them before, but it's kind of old now, so I don't think they would be particularly interested in having me sign again, because there's, I don't have a new book out to be pushing. Yeah. They've got lots of new books and things coming. So it's tough. The comic book biz.
Speaking of conventions, though, you said Nottingham's not too far away from you, didn't you, Chris?
Yeah.
And that brings us to our competition.
Hey.
I'm getting good at these segues.
Wow, that segue is great.
Yeah. Thanks.
Vomit. So Nottingham Comic Con is coming at you. I promise not to fuck this up. I was almost embarrassed about it last week.
It made for great. What is it? Do we call this radio? Is that what we call this? What do we call it?
Do we? I don't know. Yeah.
Chris, anyway, you've been doing it longer than us.
Digital broadcasting.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's not so grand. But it's coming Saturday, the 24th of October. You gonna come to that, Chris, or
Saturday the
24th of October?
I'm in America.
Oh,
okay.
I'm going to be in America. This is the first time I've been back in 2 years. So, I take that back. I'm going to Providence next week. No, this week. I'm going to Providence on Thursday for the Necronomicon, which is the big Lovecraft convention.
Cool.
And we're doing a live show there, which I did another Kickstarter for, which was successful to fund that trip.
Is Alan Moore going to that? Because he's a huge
Lovecraft. I don't think he is. No, I don't think he is.
Right.
No, he is big. He's a big Lovecraft guy, but I don't think... No, I don't. I didn't see him on the guest list. But Sandy Peterson and S.T. Joshi and Robert M. Price, these probably people you don't necessarily know.
There's the kind of
Lovecraft scholarly type guys there. So anyway, I'm sorry that I'll be missing it.
Yeah, you will be. We'll all be there, so you will. You probably won't miss much if we're there. Nottingham Comic Con. Oh God, this is going worse than last week.
At least we were on the rails.
Yeah. So we have a number of tickets to give away for Nottingham Comic Con, and we posed the question a couple of weeks ago. The tickets were kindly donated by the guys who run the convention. We posed the question: what did the comic creator Wallace Eats put in the comic I bought from her at LCAF? Did anyone know?
Well, we knew.
The answer was she put some of her hair in the comic.
Yeah,
her head. And the winner who got it correct and sent us a message into our Facebook page was Wendy Gledhill. Well done, Wendy.
Well done, Wendy.
And so two tickets will be on the door for you and a guest of your choice. So well done to Wendy. We've got another two tickets to give away in our new competition. And we've got a further question. Now, if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll know the answer to this one. And the question we're going to pose on this one is, where did Christian Wild Goose, which show was he on? Episode four, pardon me. Where did Christian Wild Goose get his Wacom tablet from? He got it from a specific place stroke person, which we'd like you to tell us who that was. So let us know on Twitter if you want to, which is at The Awesome Pod, on the Facebook group. Is that got an address, Vince?
Facebook.com/AwesomeComicsPodcast.
And or you can email us to Vince.
AwesomeComicsPod@gmail.com.
So just to repeat that, where did Chris Wild Goose get his Wacom tablet? So he's recently gone digital. He's gone from paper to drawing on a computer. I don't understand that because I'm old. Particular place. So let us know. And two tickets to Nottingham Comic Con can be yours. So God bless you. We love people who are listening from other countries. But if you can't make it to Nottingham, then don't bother answering the question, to be fair.
Yeah. We love you, but it's going to be far, far more expensive for you than it is for someone from the
UK. You can have a you know, 800 quid flight for a 12 quid ticket, but that's up to you if you want to do it.
We'll give you a bit of a cuddle.
Well, Vince will. I won't.
Hey, these arms are made for loving. I'm the world's most comfortable man, so I've been told. Anyway, have we got any events coming up, Tony, before we get into recommendations?
We have. We've got a series of events. The 22nd of August is the Safari Small Press Festival. So it's been held in a place called Protein, which is, I understand, it's some kind of club that children go to. And it's at 31 Newin Road, Shoreditch, EC2A3EY. One of our listeners, Tom Mortimer, is going to be there. So I thought I'd give Tom a shout out. So that's on the 22nd. 26th is Rachel Stott. Very talented artist, will be signing her Planet of the Apes Star Trek crossover trades at Orbital Comics in the centre of London, which is 8 Great Newport Street. It's near, the nearest tube is Leicester Square. On the same day, an hour later, so you've got time to do both, is a talk on feminism and comics at Gosh Comics, which is 1 Berwick Street in Soho. It's a great little, they have regular talks in there, and I think they record them for podcasts. Interesting bunch of people. Next up is the celeb-filled Melksham Comic-Con, which we're all going to.
Yep.
On the 29th to the 30th of August at Melksham Assembly Hall. The website for that is www.melkshamcomiccon.com. At that will be Mike Collins, artist Lee Townsend, artist Emma Vicelli, Sonia Long, who's a manga artist. I'm not aware of her work, but I've had a look at it on Twitter. It's very good. John Paul Bove, Dylan Teague, and Kavan Scott, who's a writer. There's some more guests who are apparently going to be announced. There's panels and stuff like that being announced at the moment, so pop along. And Vince has got a table. You've got a table there, Vince, haven't you?
I have indeed. I'll be talking nonsense, probably pimping out my book, The Red Mouse from Mars, probably this podcast, because we're trying to get as many people as we can listening to it. And I may even do sexy dances. I won't do sexy dances.
Yeah, I'm staying at Vince's house. He doesn't like it.
yeah. He won't actually be in the house. He'll just be behind it, just sort of staring in the window.
In the bushes. I've got a couple of mentions. Someone who sent in the recommendation for that Birdman comic, Vince? A listener.
Oh, it was. I've got it down here. James Hurley.
That's absolutely cracking. Yeah. I've got it bookmarked. I've not actually had a chance to read more than a couple of pages, but I'm going to dive into that and then I'll mention it on a upcoming.
Oh
podcast.
Well, I'm just about to mention it on my recommendations, actually.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, nice.
Beat me to it.
Yeah.
Another one I've got on the list is Otty Judson, set in his comic Zookanaut. So I'll be checking that one out, and I'll mention it next week's show. I'll give it a good read through.
Give a shout out to my son who did well in his A levels. So
that's well done.
Say hello to him. Good lad. And Alex Martin, who's a listener, who's I had a drink with yesterday and he was saying, give me a shout out or I'll kill you. So I'm just saying hello to him.
One thing, I got in touch with a charity called Thunderman. It's a character created by a 4-year-old Xander to help out fellow children's charities. And I'm trying to do an image for them to use on a T-shirt to promote anti-bullying campaign in November. Cool. If you can get in touch with them on the Facebook page, if you're a comic book artist, they're always looking for artwork to kind of like sell on or kind of use on T-shirts to raise money for charities. I'm sure they'd be more than welcome. And their website is thunder-man1.wix.com. Go and check them out.
Yeah, well worth following that course.
Yeah, and one last little thing. If you run into a webcomic, Brian King, the owner and kind of controller of Inkbrow Outbreak, he's put the website back online. So you want to get on there, claim your comic, upload your graphics and get it out there again, because it's a great resource, Ink Outbreak.
Cool.
You need your webcomic on there, basically.
Brilliant. So recommendations, chaps. Tony, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend a book out of Avery Hill you guys know I love called Metroland. It's written and created by Ricky Miller. It's a sort of long-standing project of his, even though it's only on issue 2, I think. It's been a sort of project that's appeared in various anthologies, and it's... it's got art by Julia Scheel, who I've mentioned before, who did the Sleater Kinney book a few weeks ago, and art also by Rebecca Strickson. But really, really lovely book. It's a sort of continuing story of a South London indie band who are called Electric Dreams. I don't think they have anything to do with Phil Oakey and Giorgio Moroder. I don't think that's something. But it's almost like a... I described it once as a trance-like weekend of music and existentialism. It's got a real sort of pause, a real quiet moments to it. It's quite cool, it's quite trendy, and it plays with the experiences of the protagonists in it, and then the time that it takes place over. there's a lot of sort of band references, and you know, it comes from a certain era of music and a certain sort of style, but it's a really polished product. And Ricky is a really nice guy, and he writes it really, really well. Julia's got a real eye to sort of indie, sort of hipster artwork with some lovely colour on it as well. It's well worth picking up. You can get it in Gosh Comics, and Orbital have got it in London, and I think it's on the Sequential app. I need to check that, but I think it's definitely out there digitally as well.
We didn't speak about this. Chris?
Yeah.
Can you get Transreality digitally?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
I haven't done it through Comixology. I haven't done it through any of those sites. But yeah, I don't.
Is that just from the website? You can just.
Yeah, but now that you mention it, I haven't set it up that you can just download a PDF or pay a fee to do that. So if you send me an email, then I would be more than happy to send you a PDF for a very small amount of money.
It reads really well with a backlight. I read it digitally. Obviously, you sent it out to us, but yeah. It reads really well with that sort of backlit of a tablet. I really enjoyed it. Reading it.
Yeah.
You were talking about the colors before, I wanted to give some credit to I.N.G. Kohlberg, because he was the guy that told me about coloring and print and dealing with color to print going from screen. He likes to drop out all the K in the CYMK.
Right, okay.
So there's no black, actually, there's no, well, except for the lines. The ink lines are black.
Yeah. But
all the color stuff, there's no black.
That's how you get that vibrancy.
Yeah, and if you keep the, you can kind of fake it. There's kind of a fake black where you put all the colors up to maximum.
Oh yeah, rich black, and that,
yeah, but it's not really black. It's just kind of a darker grayish tone. And I think that helped out a lot. That's for those comic book guys that are doing
it. It takes a brave man to use quite a strong magenta as a background. And you, my friend, are a brave man. And it works really well. It works really well.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I don't know if I necessarily agree after the fact. But yeah, no, I went for it. And that, for that, I am proud.
So, Dan, recommendations. What are your recommendations?
Max Forward, the artist on 3 Minute Max, we mentioned, was it last week or the week before?
Week before, I believe.
He got in touch and said there's a comic book graphic novel called Black Summer, and he said it's very Vanguard-esque. And I thought, oh, I'll give that a go.
Is that the Warren Ellis book?
Yeah, and it's very Vanguard-esque.
Out of Avatar, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Really hyper-violent, just... Basically, there's a team of superheroes called the Seven Guns, and one of their number gets fucked off of being mucked around by the president and his advisors, so he kills him. And as you imagine, the country doesn't react too well to that, and they go on the hunt for the remaining six members, and the six members try and find the rogue seventh member called John Horace and try and find out why the hell was he done that. And the artwork is spectacular. It's very Dave Gibbons-esque and line work, and the kind of Jeff Darrow is so much detail.
I was going to say, just about to say Jeff Darrow. It's got such a detailed page to it, isn't it? Yeah.
It's crazy. It's stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
is it Rip? Ivan Rip, is it? Is that the guy?
That's it. Yeah.
A lot of the Avatar stuff has that sort of very detail, like Jason Burrows and stuff like that. It's very sort of intricate line work, sort of, isn't it?
I've got to give definitely. The Mark Sweeney, the colorist, like just for coloring that everything's kind of got its own little like labels, like where there's debris flying up. It's all like beautifully colored. It's really amazing. Just the
Do you
artwork.
Think he swore much when he got the pages through? Do you reckon he like?
I hope he saw the pages before he took the job on, because there's like so many double page spreads where there's just absolutely everything's blowing up and there's just hundreds of stuff on the page and you're like, oh my god. But yeah, that's brilliant. Check it out. I got it as a trade, and
I think you can find that quite cheaply as well. I think it's in a couple of sale bins in the shops I've been in, because it's quite an old book, isn't it? I think as well.
It's part of one of three they did all about kind of a slightly different take on superhumans, and there's
isn't there one called No Hero that Warren Ellis did?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it's another one, and we've all kind of taken a little one aspect and kind of changed it a little. And I'll be looking to grab the other two, see what they're like.
Yeah, oh, cool,
nice.
Vince,
well, as we previously mentioned, James Hurley, one of our loyal listeners. Yes, we have them. These people that we wonder about and we're genuinely concerned about their welfare. He's been with us since episode one. God bless him.
Ledge.
Yeah. What a legend. Yeah. Anyway, James recommended a webcomic for us to check out. I'm sure the link, I took the opportunity, clicked on the link, and then for the next God knows how long, I was completely absorbed by the brilliance and beauty of the tale that Dan mentioned before, Bird Boy. Mm. Right. It's by Anne Zabler, and I know exactly how to say her name because I saw a YouTube interview with her. So, because it's spelled S-Z-A-B-L-A, and you know what I'm like with pronouncing things, and I always mess them up, so I wanted to make sure I got this one absolutely right. So, Anne Zabler, and it's about Bird Boy follows the story of Bali, a 10-year-old sort of boy who's part of a tribe, and he's desperate to prove his worth, despite, you know, being a young boy. He sort of follows, like, a hunting trip, and they're always telling him, like, leave us alone, you know, you're too young for this, you've got to give it a few years. So he's banned from the ceremony that would make him an adult in the eyes of his people. So he decides to take matters into his own hands. And he wants to bring proof to his tribe that he's capable of taking care of himself. So naturally, he decides to go on an adventure by himself. As we've all done that, haven't we? We've broken away from our tribes and decided to steal a legend. Yeah, we've ended up with a legendary weapon.
Down the park with a tin of cider.
Yeah.
Oh God, this could go so wrong. So basically, and he stumbles upon a legendary weapon and has to end up fleeing from like all these monsters and weird gods, men and beasts who are after this tale. And like Dan said, like he had a look at it and immediately was struck by it. And you can't say any further than that, because as soon as you start it, it's like, if I could compare it to someone, it'd be like a Studio Ghibli film.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely got that sort of style. And the dramatic...
Everything about it is so professionally done and so accomplished.
Yeah.
It's just the whole package.
Anne is, she's a concept artist for like some video games as well. I think on her resume, since like Fantasia Music Evolved and things like that. Not necessarily games that I've played, but I know, you know, concept artists who work in video games.
I've never played a video game.
Let's not go into that, Tony. lest we all get upset. surely you must have played Tetris.
Pong?
Not really.
Pong!
Yeah, everyone's played Pong.
Everyone's played Pong.
I don't know what Pong is.
It's the 40... two lines that go up and down the screen with a little ball.
Oh, yeah, when I was a kid I played that. That counts, I suppose.
Yeah,
hey, I played video games.
We've made him a modern man. Yeah. who would have thought it? So Anne comes from that sort of like works. Whenever she can, she wants to work on this comic book. And it's been going since, I think, about 2010 or 11. Volume one, she's doing, I'm not sure how many volumes done, but volume one is 80 pages. And I just went through that completely. Just got caught up. Like Dan says, the artwork is beautiful, crisp, clear line work and detail. And like, she does a lot of things like smoke and water and like snow capped lands and stuff, which snow, you could say snow is easy to do because you don't draw anything. You just leave it white. But at the same time, it's a simple thing to get wrong.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? It's got to look nice.
We talked about that with porcelain, didn't we?
Yeah.
Remember that, the snow and porcelain looks great, yeah.
A few little details just kind of completely sells it as snow.
Yeah.
But it can...
Definitely.
Yeah.
You have to show depth of it. And there's so much to it, isn't there?
Yeah. And she gets
it's
it
not
perfect.
Like a John Byrne. Do you remember John Byrne's Alpha Flight? Which was the whole issue was in a snowstorm. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I've not seen that one.
7 or something like that. Yeah, basically... he couldn't be bothered to draw it, so he had a snowstorm, and he just had voices over the top of it.
Oh, fucking really?
Yeah, genuinely. Well,
like London at night, and it's a black postcard.
Yeah, exactly. Like.
Oh God. Okay.
Well, thankfully, Anne doesn't go in that way, and like it's just the details amazing. Like the artwork's beautiful, but as we said before, you know, beautiful artwork is nothing without its story. And this one's got a real. Because you're following this child on a sort of coming of age tale, and he's caught up with all these mythical beasts and things like that. It's just beautiful, and like just the detail, because he's from a tribal sort of society. He's got his head mask, which is like a, what's the best way to say it? It's like an Indian sort of bird totem, which is where Bird Boy gets its name, I'm guessing. Mm. To draw that over and over must take quite a bit. It's definitely worth checking out. Like I say, I think she's on volume 2 at the moment, volume 3. I'm not sure if you can get physical copies yet, but you can check it all out from like day one. And the weird thing about it is, you know, we've talked about like when you start your comic and to now, you see the progression of artwork. With her, even though it started in 2010, she is consistent all the way through. Okay. Yeah, it's you know, she's like a machine. Anne, if you're out there, are you a human being? Are you a digital copy of yourself?
Yeah. Women don't speak to us, you know that.
Yeah. Not after this. You can find the comic at www.bird-boy.com, and you find Anne's work on twitter.com/ASZABLA. Very worth checking out. And also, I'll post a link to the YouTube sort of interview with her, because she just seems like really down to earth and just someone who's, you can see, just wants to work on this comic all the time, but has a full time job like we all do.
You know,
we're doing what we love when we can. So,
she's not doing that full time. It's brilliant.
Yeah. But I mean, the good thing about it is we've discovered it now and there's plenty of it to read.
Yeah.
So people should rush out. And thank you,
and
James.
It's free. In these days of expensive comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a free thing to read.
Yeah. So, James Hurley, we salute you, sir. Thank you very much for that. Chris.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. Do you want Tony to give you a back rub? No.
He does. What...
Yeah.
He doesn't.
That goes without saying.
Say who doesn't? Dan just went, who doesn't?
Yeah.
And he's met me.
So what have you got, sir, that you'd like to recommend the good folk listening to this?
My God. I'm so bad about buying new stuff. I'm just behind. Having children, it's the worst. But
yeah.
I've been... I came late to the game, but now I'm in the seventh trade of Atomic Robo.
Oh, okay. I love Atomic Robo.
Which when I started reading it, I felt like a kind of a Hellboy sort of knockoff, like Hellboy with a robot. But after I got into it a little bit more, I realized it's something very different, and it's really good. That's all I'm going to say. I can't remember which.
Drop the mic.
Which book? There's one that's really good that kind of actually touches on some sort of transhumanism, artificial intelligence stuff, which I was really impressed with because I didn't see it coming. It was sort of one of those where it was a mystery, and then as the mysteries revealed, I think it's maybe the fifth trade. I want to say it's the fifth one.
They've been around. I think they've got they've got an RPG role playing game as well. They've done
they've
done a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
so they do a free comic book every day and free comic book day as well. Yeah. I think, don't they? There's usually something from them.
Yeah.
Well, I know a lot of the first bits of them are still available for free online because it started off as a webcomic, I think.
Oh, did it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And you can still get a ton of them for free. I think maybe the first... See, I'm just talking out my ass now. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think some of it is available.
That's
on
what
the website.
We like.
He'll become a regular host at this rate.
Yeah. My arse. That's a very English. Yeah.
John Riddle. That's American too. Plants of. Yeah.
How long have you been in the UK now?
Five and a half years now. Yeah. My wife's from Keighley, and that's why we moved back here, to be close to her family and to start our own family. And now I've got two little ones. One is three, almost four, and the other one's just one now.
Yeah,
nice work.
So, yeah, man, I got busy with that stuff.
and you're still making a graphic novel.
I'm trying to do everything. It's man, these kids are just rough. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
They don't tell you.
Stop.
Yeah.
Mine's about to go to university, and it's still work.
Say that. Don't say that. I keep hoping that eventually it's just going to ease back a bit, and that I'll have some semblance of my own life again. But
yeah.
I'm starting to think that that's just a lie I'm telling myself.
Well, you've been on this show, so any semblance of your life is just gone up in smoke.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't make people famous. We make them infamous. That's what we do.
Well, I'm not just famous. I'm infamous. I'm better than famous. And yes, there is. I just looked. There is an Atomic Robo webcomic that's still up. And
oh,
happening.
Nice one.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. So where can you find that?
Atomic hyphen?
God. Yeah.
I gotta quit drinking before I do this. Atomic-robo.com.
Ah, brilliant. Cool. And you can pick up the books on Amazon.
Yeah, pick up the books, yeah. They're all over the place.
Yeah. Give him a few quid.
Yeah. Give us a few quid. Cool. No. thank you very much for joining us tonight, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys are a delight.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I like better than hearing people like my book. So.
So why did you come on this show? No. It's a regular love fest on here. We've compared us.
So positive, that's what we do.
We've always compared ourselves to the Golden Girls.
Well, one of them is a man. I've got that theory, which I've told you before.
Yeah. What? B. Arthur.
Yeah.
She's not a B. man. She is all woman.
And then some.
And then some. I made B. Arthur wallpaper at my office when I worked in an office years ago. I just took all these pictures of her I found on the internet and just kind of made a mosaic, a mural of B. Arthur. And people were so confused by it. They just would go, what's up with that? And I'm like, B. Arthur, man. And then they just... Like, didn't you watch Golden Girls? Didn't you watch the Star Wars Holiday Special?
Yeah.
Maud? Come on.
You're that guy in the office, are you? Yeah.
She was in the Star Wars Holiday Special.
She was. Yeah, she was the cantina bartender.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, have you not seen the Star Wars Holiday Special?
I've never
seen bits of it.
Blanked most of it out.
It's flipping long. It's like 2 hours.
Yeah. Really?
It's insanely long. That's one of those things you're not going to be ready for, because it just keeps going on and on and on. You're like, what? Oh, wait, I've been watching this for an hour and a half? How did this happen?
Yeah. And they've jumped the shark this week with Star Wars World. Oh, God.
Really?
What? Really?
Yeah, they've announced Star Wars World, haven't they? It's going to be like Harry Potter World. Yeah.
That sounds stupid. I don't want to see that. Yeah. That's lame. When does it open?
Yeah.
Did I set a date yet?
Yeah.
Is it Euro Disney or is it just Disney World and Disneyland?
That's okay. Yeah. We're all going on holiday anyway. I don't know if you've heard this, but we agreed last week to all go on holiday together. So yeah, we could probably go there.
Are you going to the Lake District?
Okay. Anyway,
isn't that where people go on holidays? Lake District.
I think they do. People from Liverpool tend to go to the Lake District, don't they?
You just mentioned that hedonism, Tony.
Hedonism.
I don't know what you're talking about there.
There's a small resort in Jamaica which pretty much anything goes, apparently.
Oh, I like the idea of that. Basically, they don't like it.
An awesome comics holiday would essentially be like the Scooby-Doo van like crossed with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I like to think of it more as sort of a
crossed with 50 Shades of Grey, probably.
Yeah, I'm sort of Sid James of the 50 Shades of Grey, aren't I?
Carry on, awesome pod.
That'd be good.
Yeah. Just need the Swanee whistle.
God. It never goes down if you look at it. Carry on jokes are the best.
Right, thank you so much for joining us and putting up with us, Chris.
Thank you so much.
You've been an absolute delight.
It's been
brilliant,
mate.
And
it's been a pleasure.
Once again, where can people get your Kickstarter for Transreality 2?
Just go to Kickstarter and type in Transreality, or you can go to my page, transrealitycomic.com, and there's a link. There's, you know, it's on the page to say go to the Kickstarter. So
he's a modern man, as you can tell.
Yeah.
What's your website, dude?
My personal website is chrislackey.co.uk, which has got a bunch of other stuff on there. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Chris Lackey.
Ah, posh.
And you're also one of the co-hosts
of the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast at hppodcraft.com.
See, he's done that many a time. And that's why this episode, I've been listening to that show for quite a long time. So this
great
is a
show,
kind,
yeah. Really
yeah,
good.
It's kind of a weird moment for me, like talking to someone that's been talking to me for years. Chris has been
kind of screwed up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh,
that's a bit, you can put that in Transreality too.
Yeah.
There's got to be something there, isn't there?
Done.
Entering the world you've listened to.
Well, yeah. I'll email you some photo reference. Anyway, we hope you like the show, folks, and definitely check out Chris's book. And tell us about what you think of the show, what you'd like us to check out, like James did and various other people. There's several different ways you can do it. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, which is also where you can send the entries for the competition. Any books you want us to check out, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We're available on Twitter @theawesomepod. Facebook is facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Come along, like us, tell us what you want us to check out and what you think of the latest show. And we post like crazy images and all kinds of stuff there.
Rubbish.
Yeah. Check it out. It's rubbish. Well, what's that for marketing, Tony?
Honesty sells.
Yeah, it's true. Nothing gets more honest than your photographs. And the website, if you're probably listening to us on Podbean, awesomecomics.podbean.com. Check out some of the links that are on the page. You know, all the books we've talked about and all of, you know, like Chris's Kickstarter, etc. There will be links to click on them, find out more about them. You can also find us on iTunes. And if you've listened to us on iTunes, please send us a review, because we're desperate for attention, aren't we, boys?
Yeah.
Even Chris is desperate for attention. And he's only been on it for an hour and a half. That's what we
I'm
do
just
people.
Desperate.
Oh, I'm taking that little bit of audio and using
it. That's going
it.
On our t-shirt.
I'm just desperate. Every week has a hashtag, that's going to be it. Right, where can you follow us on Twitter, fellas? Dan?
At Vanguard Comic.
Tony?
It's at Ezoyes, which is E-Z-O-H-Y-E-Z.
Brilliant. And as always, you can follow me at Jester Diablo. Don't say anything, Tony. I know you want to say something every week, every time I say that. One day I will tell you all, but you'll have to keep listening to find out.
Please.
thank you once again, Chris, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome back anytime.
Cheers, Chris.
Anytime, I'll be on the next episode. See you then.
And I'll be gone. That'll be it. He's just taken over in one episode. So have a good week, folks. From Dan, Tony, Chris, and myself, have an awesome week and stay awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
See ya.